Hello, this is DJ May, and welcome to The Seed. Thank you for joining me today here on radio.dominican.edu. I hope you are sitting comfy, relaxed, and ready to take a journey with me through the mind and beyond. Today, I bring you a topic that I'm sure all of you have wondered about at some point in your life. I know I certainly have. I'm talking about intuition. Now, some of you may call it the sixth sense, or some may call it an instinct or psychic ability, or even mysticism. Obviously, this word has a more negative connotation to it. But for today, we're going to call it intuition. And Merriam-Webster would define intuition as direct perception of truth, fact, etc., independent of any reasoning process or immediate apprehension. Despite the fact that there's a lot of evidence about intuition being collected nowadays because of the technology we have, there are still a lot of doubting Thomases out there, along with people who aren't really interested in this ability that we have, and that's okay. That's why I'm here today, to offer some information and insight about this extrasensory ability that we all have and should use. So to start, I'll bring up the first written records of intuitive processes. We'll also be exploring how these processes work by taking a look at several experiments that were done. Really fascinating stuff. I'll also be sharing ways that will actually strengthen your intuition. And yes, you can become more intuitive, just like you can become more intelligent or a better athlete or a better seer. And why do this? Why would we benefit from a greater intuition? Well, I'll let you know that too. And finally, we will explore the mind of a psychic, which is actually really phenomenal. And I was a little bit skeptic when I was researching, but let me tell you, I have some really interesting facts for you. So before we get into the meat of the subject, I want to tell you a little something that happened the other day that I'm still trying to understand. So I was walking my dogs with a friend the other day, and he pulled out a quarter, and he often plays heads or tails. So I took the quarter from him this time, and I asked him heads or tails, and first try he got it right. And then I asked him again, and I said heads or tails, and he said whatever he said, and he got it right again. And I asked a third time, and he thought about it a little harder, took a little longer for him to answer, but he was right. And I swear, on everything I love, I flipped that damn coin at least 9 times, and he got it right every time. He never got it wrong, because we stopped playing because I got a little weirded out by it. But, you know, I told him that he needed to go to Vegas and, you know, play craps or something. And I asked him, how did you do that? Like, what are you thinking when you're, you know, deciding what you're going to choose? And he said he really doesn't know how he did it. But the pictures he was envisioning pictures in his head. And when I would ask him heads or tails, he would envision a tail, but it wasn't a normal tail. It was like the tail of a dragon. And then when he said that he pictured a head of George Washington, but it was like an animated head. I don't know about all that, but I know he got it correct every time. And what are the chances of that happening, really? Well, I looked it up, and the only statistics out there specify the likelihood of the coin being heads or tails, not the likelihood of a person accurately calling it heads or tails. And there was no method to my friend's calling. It wasn't like he called it heads 2 times and then tails 1 time. Every call was completely independent from the next, and I could tell that he was really thinking about it. It was just amazing. I'd never seen anything like it. So anyways, things like this obviously happen, and I'm not sure how they can be explained, but we're going to try and explain them today. Anyways, so let's move on to the first written records of intuitive processes. They came through the works of seers who interpreted signs supposedly sent by the gods for people. And then there's oracles, which have been recorded to date back from 2000 BC, the Egyptian oracles, actually. Then later the oracles from 6th century Greece. Now, the oracle's powers were highly sought after and never doubted. If there was any inconsistency between prophecies and events, they were dismissed as a failure on the seeker's part that they incorrectly interpreted the response of the oracle. So the oracle was never in error. This being said, some researchers would point out that Greek oracles had a couple of advantages. Number one, you didn't just come and ask your question. You had to hang around the temple for a while, talk to the priests, and they got to know you. It wasn't like you just went up there and asked your question. Second, everybody came to the same few oracles for help. And the priests at these oracles, these skeptics are claiming, they compared notes with each other. So if you asked, should I get married to George? And the oracle said yes. And then the next week, George goes and asks the oracle, should I ask Susie's hand in marriage? And he says, yes. Or will I get married? And then he says, yes. And the oracle already knows the answer. So Nonetheless, they must have been doing something right because people flock to them for answers daily. And I highly doubt that people who had money, who were, you know, pouring their money into finding out these answers, would do it if it wasn't at least somewhat legit. You also had your medicine men who are traditional healers and spiritual leaders among the more indigenous and aboriginal people. They're often referred to as shamans, and the primary function of these people is to secure the help of the spirit world for the benefit of the entire tribe or community. You also had your diviners in the Aztec, Babylonian, Hebraic, and Chinese cultures, right? And it's interesting, what would you say our society has today? I mean, we certainly don't have oracles around that we can go to. We don't have diviners. We have psychics. But the authentic ones seem to be far and few between, which actually would make sense because back in those days there weren't that many oracles to be seen. So in ancient Western traditions, the topic of intuition certainly occupied the thoughts of some very brilliant and powerful people. There was Pythagoras, born in 570 BC, who believed that numbers existed in intuitive realms, right? There was Plato, who was born in 427 BC. His school of idealism rests on intuitive knowledge. And Plato, who lived 400 years before Christ, believed that human beings are chained in darkness, believing reality to be the things that we see around us. A higher reality, he says, does exist beyond. And if we could just be set free and experience it, we would understand that it is far better because it is the actual true reality of which everything is but a shadow. How profound. We also have Aristotle, born in 384 BC, believing that knowledge exists without proof. Then if we were to look at a timeline, we'd see the growth of Christianity when intuitive knowledge becomes, well, less important, really. Then comes the triumph of science, which completely disrupts the sense of intuition. I mean, the empiricists and rationalists of that time were not about to believe in something that they couldn't prove. It just wasn't for that time. And I feel like this is when the word mysticism started coming about. Immanuel Kant, who most of us here at Dominican University know of, was a brilliant philosopher who lived in the 18th century, and he believed that intuition was the non-rational recognition of an object. Then later, philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer contributes that intuition goes beyond appearances. And appearances, he says, are in the realm of where intellect is. And he has that intuition works by will. Then Henry Bergson follows that line of thought, suggesting that the intellect can analyze a person, event, or situation, but never completely know it. He says that complete knowledge can only be obtained through intuition. In the 20th century, Carl Jung, who was the founder of analytic psychology, taught that there are four cognitive functions that define how we perceive and judge the world. They are, he says, thinking, feeling, sensing, and intuition. Then we have futurist Buckminster Fuller, who believed that intuition was a core skill for human evolution, and that it is partly responsible for the major breakthroughs in science, art, and all human endeavors, really. So this list continues on, and the people I mentioned are definitely figures from which a lot of beliefs and ideas came from. Coming up in the second portion of our show, we take a look at experiments that researchers conducted for the purpose of finding out more on intuition. Prepare yourselves for the most fascinating findings about our intuitions, only on The Seed at radio.dominican.edu. We will be back.
Strangers, I can think.
That was a song called Life in Mono by a wonderful Japanese group called Mono. Welcome back to The Seed. I'm your host, DJ May, and if you are just now joining us, we have been discussing intuition. For this portion of the show, we will be taking a look at the findings of scientists who've performed several well-thought-out and intricate tests to see if our intuition can outsmart the tests. First up, we have Barnaby Dunn, a scientist at the Medical Research Council in the UK, and he conducted a study that measured how accurately subjects could count their heartbeats during time intervals. Then he would ask the subjects to play a little game. They would each be turning over their cards from four different decks and would be winning or losing money based on the cards they drew. What the subjects didn't know was that the decks were rigged. Two decks had more high-valued cards, and two were stacked with losers. As the subjects played, a sensor recorded changes in their heartbeats. After just a few rounds, the monitor showed a dip in the players' heart rates whenever they went near certain decks. The body, not the mind, became aware of the different decks first. And Dunn found that some individuals who'd been better able to measure their own heart rates performed better in the game overall. Scientists at the University of Iowa had performed a similar study earlier, measuring the perspiration on people's palms. What they found was that players started generating responses like sweaty palms to the bad decks within 10 cards. Yet they didn't start suspecting that the decks were rigged until 50 cards, and not until 80 cards were they able to explain how the decks were stacked. So their clammy hands were signaling suspicion about the decks long before their conscious minds made the connection. So we all know that it's pretty easy to tell something's afoot when your heart is pounding and you're drenched in sweat. Like when you're about to give a speech in front of a large audience, or you're about to go and perform for the first time at a radio station, you know. And generally, when you're about to do something you fear, basically, you start to sweat and your body is reacting. But in a different sense, when you have a subtle shift in pulse or perspiration, this experiment is showing that your intuition is trying to deliver a message for you, and you don't even know. The cards are in front of you, and there is a quote bad deck and a good deck, and your hands, your body is knowing, and it's reacting without you even knowing. Regarding our eyesight and what we see, of course we have eyes that look around and we receive images. I'm looking around, looking at all the posters and the stickers around here. And then my brain is processing these images, right? But scientists are saying that we actually have two vision tracks, one conscious and the other intuitive. As a result, the eyes see much more than we realize. For instance, take a look at people who have gone blind because of brain damage or a car accident or something traumatic. These people can still navigate through an obstacle course and even identify an emotion on a person's face. So their eyes aren't really receiving, their physical eyes are not receiving images for their brains to process, but their intuitive vision track is receiving visual stimuli. And these people say that they know exactly what is around them. They just don't know how they know. Now, if these blind sight patients may be an extreme example, but they do illustrate something that we all do, and that is see things unconsciously through eyes that are not our physical eyes. So we absorb and retain visual information that doesn't ever touch our conscious mind.
Let's look at another study. Dr. Joy Hirsch, who is the director of fMRI Research Center at Columbia University Medical Center, has shown that our brains react with anxiety of images of faces expressing fear, even when such images are flashed so quickly that we have no idea that we even saw them. And when I say quickly, I mean like 33 milliseconds, too fast to even register in our conscious awareness. Apparently, it is our amygdala that responds to these pictures. And the amygdala, by the way, also plays an important role in us processing our emotions. So this reaction that the amygdala takes part in stems from our earliest origins when our ancestors confronted strangers who were quickly discerned. The newcomers' feelings and motives were more likely to survive. So if you judged someone based on your gut instinct, you were more likely to survive. This makes sense to me. Have you ever been around someone and without even talking to them or, you know, introducing yourself to them, you're just turned off already? You may think to yourself, like, wow, that's really messed up. I'm not even giving this person a chance. Maybe it was something that I didn't like about their clothes or the look on their face or something about them. But no, that's not it. It's your intuition working, signaling to your body that for whatever reason, you ought to stay away. It's beyond the conscious mind, and there is no reasonable explanation for it. Same instinct applies to animals, I think, like my dogs. I have a Samoyed and another husky type dog. He's mixed, so I'm not exactly sure what he is. He's cute, that's what I know. But yeah, when people come over to the house, they will warm up to some and they will growl at others and they will not back down. Like, they can give them treats and I will give them a piece of cheese. I don't give them pieces of cheese anymore. Turkey. And they'll take the turkey and they won't warm up to them ever. I'm not sure why, but maybe it's the vibe. This one lady in particular, who is a friend of the family, the Samoyed does not like her at all. I don't know what's up, but she is kind of eccentric and aggressive. Maybe that's why, actually. So research is showing that our instincts often hit us first on a visceral level, meaning that our instincts are not coming from an intellectual level, but rather an intuitive level, which makes the signal move way faster than our thoughts do. We all process things that we are not consciously aware of. It's a feeling of knowing that uses an older brain structure. The question still remains, though, what is it that signals our bodies to act this way or to warn us? Nobody knows that still. I mean, we know that we have human energy fields around us. That's what they're studying right now. Perhaps that's it. But what makes a person's energy bad? And what makes, even if it's not bad, what makes another person steering away from it? It's really interesting and fascinating. Coming up after the break, we will explore the benefits of strengthening your intuition and how this might be done. This is The Seed, and I am your host, DJ May. Stay tuned. That was Enigma with Return to Innocence, one of my top favorite songs for sure. And I am DJ May, your host here on The Seed. Spend your time enjoying an amazing view and giving back to your community. Richardson Bay Audubon Center and Sanctuary is looking for energetic folks who have a passion for engaging the public and its children about the nature and wildlife around us. There are some physical requirements, not too many, and there is a request. There is a request that volunteers commit to a minimum of 2 days per month, 4.5 hours tops per day. If you are interested in learning more or want to participate, please contact Wendy Dahlia at wdahlia@audubon.org. Again, that's wdahlia@audubon.org. Or you can call her at 415-388-2524. And if you're just now tuning in, we've been discussing the topic of intuition. And right now we're going to look at the reason why we might want to strengthen this sense. And we'll also be talking about some ways that we could achieve this. So a great reason why we would want to strengthen this intuitive process that we have is because it leads to a process of working in the flow state. And when I say flow state, I mean that the analytical mind can be relieved of its constant monitoring and producing and evaluating performance. And when the analytical mind is quieted, the performer can become completely absorbed in his experience or her experience. Have you ever noticed yourself saying, gosh, I think too much? When you're thinking super hard about a subject, you're not going anywhere. Well, it's most likely that yes, you are thinking too much, and it would be much different if you quieted your analytical mind. You wouldn't turn less intelligent if you allowed this to happen, I promise.
In fact, another advantage of strengthening your intuitive process is that you would be thinking faster because your intuitive process, as we said before, is faster than your analytical thinking mind mode. The right brain or intuitive brain is a pattern recognition brain that instantly connects inputs to output, contrary to slow linear mode of the brain. Okay, so I've given you a few reasons why intuition would be beneficial for you to strengthen, and now your analytic mind may be asking me, well, how am I supposed to do this? I mean, you're asking me to strengthen something I'm not even consciously aware of. And yes, it does sound difficult for your ears, but really, you can strengthen it by practicing meditation. A 2005 study found that in meditators, brain regions associated with sensitivity to the body signals, and sensory had more gray matter. The greater the meditation experience, the more developed the brain regions. Now, I know that meditation is always thrown out there for everything, but really, it doesn't cost any money. It only takes a couple of minutes if you want. And studies prove it to be extremely beneficial for us. I was listening to Desert Rose at the last show, and she was talking about meditation too. It's really good. For those of you who have a really hard time meditating, it's okay. You are not alone, and it may simply be that your analyzing brain mode is one that is sort of harder to turn off. A lot of brilliant people have a hard time meditating. Take, for example, my former philosophy teacher, John Marmitz. There are so many things that make this man amazing. Like, he has this ability to explain such complex and confusing subjects so eloquently and perfectly. He's written philosophical books for education, and he's spoken at a lot of conventions and conferences, and he really, his mind is extremely advanced. I feel like he comes from another planet. I mean, he's really, truly brilliant and very sweet on top of it. And he, to me, is like a Mr. Logic, you know? Even the way he writes things on the whiteboard, everything is so compartmentalized and ordered, and his handwriting is very neat, very simple. Yeah, his notes are minimal, but just enough, and his pictures were never sloppy. You know how you have some teachers who write on the blackboard, and if they have to draw like a body, they'll draw like a gingerbread man? Like, they're just, you know, kind of, they're not perfect. It's not a perfect body. No, he draws a perfect body that the lines are connected, and it's just very neat, to say the least. But I'll never forget in class when he said that it was impossible for him to meditate. He said that when he sits down and tries to stop thinking, he really can't. And then he starts stressing out that he can't stop thinking, and then he starts wondering why he can't stop thinking, and it's just like a circular mode of why he can't stop thinking. And he's not denying that meditation wouldn't be beneficial for him. He really wants to do it, but he really doesn't feel like he can achieve that state of mind where the brain activity slows down and isn't busy receiving all these messages. And he kept mentioning how when he sat there, he heard thoughts running through his head. So he was hearing a voice, but really the intuition doesn't have a voice. The voice we hear in our head and the voice that my teacher was hearing is actually, to meditation, the arch enemy of intuition, according to Stewart and Hubert Dreyfus, who are the creators of the Dreyfus model of skill acquisition. That voice we hear, they say, is the linear analyzing brain mode working. It's slow, verbal, and always trying to connect cause and effect. And the intuition resides in the other brain mode, the non-verbal creative mind. And yes, he does know, and I know, that it would behoove him to strengthen his intuitive performance so he could, if he could just prevent his analytic processes from overpowering his intuition. For me to meditate and turn down my analytical mind, I focus on something small
like a leaf on a plant or like a swirl on a rug. And I see people sitting, you know, in Indian style with their hands on their knees and they're closing their eyes, I wonder how they can actually achieve a meditative state, especially when you're in like a group of people, like at a yoga class or something. It doesn't work for me. And I've tried it before. It just doesn't work. Sometimes I could just close my eyes wherever I am, though, and focus on those little like blue and red specks in my eyelids. And I just kind of drift off, and that works for me. But really what I'm trying to say is that there's no proper way to meditate. It's however you feel comfortable, really. Even if you were just to sit near a beautiful sound like a waterfall and close your eyes and just sit there. And it's okay if you're thinking still, and don't worry if you're thinking. Accept it and surrender to your thoughts, and maybe it'll calm you down a little bit. We've got to go to a quick break now, but I hope you're enjoying our discussion so far about intuition, and I look forward to the next and final segment of our show, where I uncover information about psychics and how their minds work. Stay tuned. I will be back.
Hello, we are back, and you are listening to The Seed with me, DJ May, on radio.dominican.edu. Saturday, October 12th, is Community Service Day here at Dominican when students Sarah Purcell and Nicholas Garcia are conducting Trash Awareness Day. Wherever you are on Saturday, whether it be on campus or walking down a street, pick up a piece of trash and throw it away. Be part of making the difference on our campus or wherever you are. In fact, recycling one aluminum can saves enough energy to run a TV for 3 hours or the equivalent of a half gallon of gasoline. So you see, small efforts make a difference. Participate on Saturday. Tuning back into our discussion, we've been exploring the realm of intuition. So we took a brief look at some notable figures throughout history who've used intuition and who acknowledge its never-ending presence. And we've also looked at some experiments that prove intuition to be real. And we also mentioned the benefits and how we can strengthen intuition with meditation. And for this portion of the show, I'd like to turn the focus on the people who use their intuition as part of their vocation, or they rely solely on intuition for their vocation. And I'm talking about the psychics, the channelers, the intuitives. And I'd just like to mention before we go there that if your religion deters you away from psychics and what they do, I understand that you may feel a little uncomfortable during this segment, but do keep in mind that these people really do have phenomenal abilities and that it is more scientific than you think. Psychic comes from the word psyche, which has several related meanings. The first meaning is mind. The deeper meaning is soul or spirit. And the deepest and originating meaning is breath. No psychic believes that they can predict the future, by the way. Many, in fact, believe the world and universe is made from energy, and they are simply in tune with the energy at that moment that someone is giving off, and the energy that surrounds them. The exact capabilities of psychics varies, but almost all of them use intuition. It is said that intuition strikes anyone who isn't a psychic, but psychics seem to have it strike more frequently. There was an episode on Dr. Oz, I think it was in May, where Dr. Daniel made a guest appearance and talked about the brain image scans that he was collecting for several years, and he actually has over 80,000 scans of people. And Dr. Oz says he's extremely credible, so we're going to talk about Dr. Amen today. Now, he originally took scans of people to see how the brain functions during emotions. Like when someone's scared, he'll scan their brain to see what kind of activity is going on up there. And one of the ladies he scanned told him after he scanned her, like he scanned her as a normal brain. And after her scan, she told him that she was a channeler. So he decided to put the equipment back on her to scan her while she was channeling. And he brought those images to the show. So before she started her channeling, her brain had a moderate level of activity. The activity is displayed in these scans as red regions on the brain. So when the red is all over, that means they're highly active. When she started channeling, though, the brain scan showed an all blue image, meaning that the brain completely dropped in activity. And this made sense to Dr. Amen because in order to channel something from what he calls the outside world, you've really got to quiet or calm down the noise in your own brain. And what do you know? The intuitive process requires a quieting down of the analytical mind, just like we talked about last segment.
In the next portion of the Dr. Oz show, Dr. Amen brings three real brains in and begins showing the audience the regions that are highly active during a psychic experience. And he was pointing to the temporal lobes, specifically the right temporal lobe. Just a side note, there's research from Canada showing that researchers stimulated the right side of the temporal lobe. People feel a presence of something, which is really interesting. So this does show that the right temporal lobe is indeed activated when a presence is felt. So Dr. Oz had a channeler on his show. Her name is Teresa Caputo, or Caputo, and she has her own show, actually. It's called the Long Island Medium, I think it's called. Yes. DJ Harley. Harley D says that's right. She agrees. So Teresa goes on the show, and she agrees to have her brain scanned while she is channeling. Dr. Amen brings in a quantitative EEG, which detects the electrical activity in the brain, and it shows us which areas work really hard during any kind of stimulation. And for him to find out which parts work hard, he detects the kinds of brain waves that are working. And for those of you who don't know, there are four types of brain waves. There's beta waves, which is most related to our conscious mind. And in this state, one's psychic faculties are the most muted because exterior stimuli dominate the thoughts. It's a very alert kind of feeling when you're experiencing beta waves. Then there's alpha waves, and these waves show someone to be alert, but when you're relaxed, they bring a focus to you. It's a sense of focus. And then there's theta waves that can be when you're daydreaming, relaxed, and focused. I have a lot of theta waves going on right now. Then there's delta waves, and that's when you're in a deep dreamless sleep and you never know when this is happening to you. So these waves can be pieced together to see what's going on in the brain. And what they found in Teresa Caputo's brain when she isn't channeling is very high alpha waves, which Dr. Amen said is stronger than most people, and that means that she can easily get into a meditative state. So then Teresa, she starts channeling, and she's instructed to raise her finger when she makes contact with the other side, and she immediately starts raising her finger. And the results of her brain scan are fascinating. While she started channeling, the alpha waves went down dramatically and her temporal lobes were completely activated. And this is interesting because people with anxiety or those who have seizures have the same area of the brain activated. And Dr. Amen, before he put all of the equipment on her, he said, "Let me ask you a quick question. Do you get anxiety?" And she, Teresa, the channeler, says, "Oh my God, I have so much anxiety throughout the day, like so much." So what do you know? A lot of people who suffer from anxiety apparently have their temporal lobe is highly active. So it's not like it's really a bad thing to have anxiety. It actually may mean something, it may mean you have more psychic abilities than others. So people think that we feel stressed because of a variety of mental, emotional, societal, or spiritual pressures, but that seems like it's only half the truth. We feel stressed because we resist such pressures. And if we dig deeper, we find that we live in a sea of psychic energies and that we resist the pressure in order to maintain our little bubble of personal reality. If this kind of psychic atmospheric pressure gets too much, we experience what is called anxiety. So, cleanse yourself. Breathe deeply. Accept the consequences of your decisions, even if they are bad ones. Say goodbye to psychic stress and worry. Do your best and let come what may. And that is it for today, folks. I hope you enjoyed this show as much as I enjoyed revealing this amazing information about our capabilities as humans. Please join me next Monday at 2 p.m. as I attempt to uncover the truth about dreams. This is DJ May signing off. Go safely through the maze of human life. Tread lightly and walk with love. Ta-ta.